iHeart Podcasts.
Hey there, podcast listeners. It's Mango from Part-Time Genius. Now, every week, people write in and they say, we like your show, but we've run out of episodes and we want more like it. Or sometimes they'll say things like, we love the facts, but we hate Mango's laugh. And I'm looking for something with less of Mango's laugh. And the truth is, we love to send listeners recommendations either way. So on our show, Will and I have talked about things on our network like Committed, Food Stuff, Ridiculous History. There's so much good stuff on How Stuff Works. We've also talked about things that aren't on our network, like Every Little Thing, Story Pirates, Song Exploder, so many great shows. I mean, you know, this is really a wonderful age for podcasting. But one thing I hadn't listened to enough of, even though they sit right next to us, is Stuff to Blow Your Mind. And Robert Lamb and Joe McCormick are both super nice guys. They have such a great sense of humor. And I've honestly been binging on episodes. And we thought you might want to listen to a wonderful one we've plucked for you. It's called Astronauts and Spaceships Getting Coffee. Here it is. Hope you dig it.
Welcome to Stuff to Blow Your Mind from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hey, welcome to Stuff to Blow Your Mind. My name is Robert Lamb.
And I'm Joe McCormick. And before we got on mic here, Robert and I were just talking about our favorite coffee cliches. What do you call those sayings? Like sayings that people put on a t-shirt or in a little meme or on a pillow or a keychain fob. Like,
oh, you're talking about a little bumper sticker wisdom, aren't you?
Yeah, I don't know what the word for that is. It's not quotes, but the kinds of text you put on things in order to be witty. Like, I like my coffee like I like my men. And then there's some joke.
Yeah, sort of like, I like my coffee like I like my astronauts. Bold and highly susceptible to cosmic radiation.
I like my coffee like I like my men. Congested and with bone atrophy. That doesn't make any sense, does it?
No, no. But we failed.
We haven't failed.
But of course, what we're trying to do is noble. We're trying to bring coffee and space together. And really, that's been a noble mission in space exploration in general for a while. How are we going to enable our brave astronauts to drink coffee in space?
This is an important subject, and I actually mean that. It's not this might be kind of a niche topic maybe, mm-hmm. but stick around because coffee in space is more interesting than you might think, and it's more important than you might think.
Yeah, I mean, certainly we're going to get into some cool physics here. Those are the fluid dynamics of liquids and heated liquids in microgravity. But I mean, bottom line, coffee and the experience of having a cup of coffee is a very important terrestrial practice. Mm-hmm. And as we go into space, it's good to have something like that to bring with us. It grounds us. It gives us a sense of calm, a sense of normalcy in this highly dangerous environment.
Robert, what do you think would happen if you were at the same time asked to do something unusual? You had to like undertake a dangerous mission, and you were also deprived of coffee concurrent with that.
Well, I would have to have this does happen sometimes.
Mm-hmm. Oh, really?
Yeah, like when traveling. Sometimes, you know, some sort of stress comes up on traveling. So what I try and do is have some sort of like green tea pills on hand, you know, something mm-hmm. where I can give myself some caffeine and I'm not having to just chase down a bad cup of coffee in the middle of nowhere
green
to get
tea
it.
Green tea pills. I don't mean to judge. That sounds sterile and perverted.
Yeah, well, there's no pleasure in it except it can help stave off a caffeine headache. It can, you know, help keep me awake if I'm driving, that sort of thing. And so if I was in outer space, conceivably, I imagine I could get by without the coffee, provided that I had access to the green tea pills, or whatever kind of additional stimuli they had up there on hand to keep me alert and focused.
But coffee is more than just caffeine, right?
I mean, oh, yeah.
That caffeine is one of the main things about it. We like its drug effects, but coffee is an institution of human life in many cultures around the world. It's not just a chemical, but it's an important texture of life.
Yeah, I mean, it's the drinking of the coffee, and but it's also the making of the coffee, just the practice of making a cup of coffee. For many people, myself included, like, that is a part of the ritual.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you just, it's part of your morning or your afternoon, whenever you have that essential cup.
It's quiet. It's meditative. It makes me start to feel like I'm getting ready for the day. It's one of those things that, I think often we underestimate the power of simple physical rituals in preparing our mind space for, mm-hmm. for activities. Like, people think they need coffee because they need caffeine in order to start getting work done. And that is somewhat true. The caffeine does something. But you also need the process of the brewing and the drinking. That doing those familiar motions gets you primed.
Yeah. It's you're engaging in the story too. Like, this is the story of the thing I must do to start working. And likewise, that's a whole other avenue too for many coffee drinkers, like the story of the beans. And certainly, yes, there are varying degrees of quality and varying flavors for different types of coffee beans and different preparation methods, et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
But we also get just so into the story of them. It's like with wine enthusiasts.
Oh, yeah.
Right? I mean, there are some scientific studies that kind of cast doubt onto what degree a wine enthusiast can actually taste various differences in
right.
the vintage that they're drinking. But
I mean, if you put a label on wine that said tastes like seashells and sweet and low, people mm-hmm. would be able to taste that.
Right. Yeah. But ultimately, it's all about the story of that wine, and you're engaging with that story, and it's bringing you value. You know, it's
mm-hmm.
And I don't think there's anything wrong with that. And so there's that going on with coffee as well. And as we'll touch on later, there's a little of that in the story of coffee and space.
You know, Robert, one of the things that you made me realize is that the reason we actually need coffee and space for real astronauts is the same reason there's always a scene of astronauts drinking coffee in sci-fi movies about space.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we were sort of brainstorming about this, like what films, what classic sci-fi films have coffee drinking scenes. And you see it in Alien from 79.
Yeah.
You see it in Silent Running from 72. Mm-hmm. 2001 A Space Odyssey. There's
I've
a
totally
scene.
Forgotten.
Yeah, now I'm not sure. I don't remember. It's been a little while since I've seen it. I'm due for a reviewing. It's possible that they're drinking tea. I'm not sure which mm-hmm. Characters are drinking in this particular scene. But
or maybe just scalding hot orange juice.
Yeah, but tea is very similar, of course, because tea is also checking off the same boxes, the ritual, the hot brew that invigorates you, et cetera.
Speaking of tea, we know that at least a certain Starfleet captain loves his Earl Grey hot, but do they drink coffee on the Enterprise?
They did. They at least did. I found a screenshot from Star Trek Voyager.
Mm-hmm.
So there's at least one scene with coffee, but I'm sure there are countless other examples of characters drinking some sort of coffee-based beverage.
Did the Long Ones drink coffee in The Expanse?
Well, there is a lot of coffee drinking in the Expanse. There's a particular high-grade coffee machine on one of the main ships,
mm-hmm.
and it's referenced a lot. And at one point, it's broken, and everybody is rather upset about it. But this is a show that does at least value the engineering challenges involved with creating a proper coffee brewing device for a spaceship that's going to be going in and out of microgravity.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, there's this scene from Event Horizon.
Don't speak of it. It features some really tasteless jokes.
Yeah, yeah. But even still, we see this trend continuing where you have characters in outer space, in this just unrelatable environment for the vast majority of the human population.
Mm-hmm.
You have them engaging in even more elaborate scenarios, encountering aliens or demons from the other side of a wormhole. But if there's anything that we can relate to in what they're doing and what they want out of life, it's that cup of coffee.
Oh, yeah. This is a standard part of narrative theory that you have – if you want to tell an extraordinary story,
mm-hmm.
you need to ground the extraordinary elements of the story in mundane things, things that make you feel familiar and comfortable in order to accent the unfamiliarity of the strange parts of the story.
Yeah, I remember Umberto Eco wrote an essay dealing with some of this, talking about coffee consumption in, I think, James Bond novels as well as another spy series. What was the one that – they made films of it with Michael Caine. What was Michael Caine's spy character?
I just looked it up. It's Harry Palmer.
Yeah, that's the one. That's the one.
The Ipcress file.
Yeah, so the idea is you have these spy characters, and they're doing all of this crazy stuff. They're going
who have Harry Palms for some reason.
But no matter what they're doing, you know, if they're wrestling giant squid or what have you, they're still drinking that coffee, and mm-hmm. that serves as an anchoring point for our experiences.
A lot of horror and sci-fi movies do this also with cigarettes.
Oh, yeah.
Coffee and cigarettes, I think, are especially useful consumables for this narrative purpose, for grounding the narrative in a kind of mundane familiarity and comfort, because coffee and cigarettes are symbols of order.
Mm.
You ever think about this? Like, you can group food and drink and drugs into categories of order symbology and chaos symbology. Like, if you had characters on a starship doing heroin or something like that, that would like throw you off even more, right? It would
right.
sort of like make the narrative feel even more untethered and chaotic. But if you give people these drugs that we typically think of as associated with regularity, stability, routine, comfort, compliance, they're sort of signals of orderliness and predictability. And nicotine and caffeine are definitely both drugs like that. And of course, that's not an endorsement of actually doing them.
No, but to your point, like the order comes from far more than just the substance itself. It's
yeah.
the I've talked to people who have been smokers or mm-hmm. former smokers, and I think most cases, and they talk about how just having the cigarette, it like gives them a sense of purpose in a particular environment. So like
yes.
you're standing around, you know, outside at a show or something, mm-hmm. and the like having the cigarette, it like kind of gives you license to be there doing something, and then potentially engaging socially with other people.
Yeah. Well, it's also a meditative ritual.
Yeah.
And you perform the same familiar actions in the same order over and over again when you brew a cup of coffee or when you have a cigarette. Again, not endorsing tobacco. But when you do these things, you light up again that familiar pathway in your brain.
Yeah. I've been at social situations where I don't know anyone. And if there's coffee, or sometimes it's some other beverage, but as long as I have the beverage, it like gives me an added sense of purpose. I have this thing mm-hmm. that I'm doing. And then when the cup is empty, I still feel compelled to carry the cup around, because
yeah.
if I put the cup down, then I'm just standing here with nothing in my hands. What am I doing here? What kind of a freak show am I?
You need a cup in each hand. Then you feel even more secure.
Yeah, duct taped into place, right?
Edward Coffee Hands.
Yes.
Yeah, so it's clear coffee plays a role in establishing these meditative rituals that make us feel comfortable, in putting us in a calm mindset, getting us ready to do things, making us productive. It has all these benefits. I wanted to talk about a couple of other benefits I just found poking around in studies on the effects of coffee that seem like they would be useful in space. One of them, Robert, I bet you may have encountered this, is the principle we've discovered in recent years that warm drinks make us feel social warmth.
Oh, yeah. We have touched on that before.
Yeah. So the standard study, I think the original one of these was published in Science years ago by Williams and Barg, and it's called Experiencing Physical Warmth Promotes Interpersonal Warmth. And the basic setup is you've got people who hold a cup of hot coffee as opposed to a cup of iced coffee. And apparently what the study found is that subjects who were holding the hot coffee, quote, judged a target person as having a warmer personality in terms of being more generous or caring. And also people holding the hot coffee were more likely to choose a gift for a friend instead of for themselves. Hmm. And I've read there are subsequent studies on this that look into things like oral temperature and all that. It seems generally that hot beverages encourage positive social connections.
And we can certainly see the value of that just, in an office environment or out on the street. But certainly in space, you have a team that's having to work together to keep everything running, to keep everybody alive.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes an international team, the coffee and or tea can be a unifying force.
Exactly. And so this effect may be there with other hot beverages. I mean, sure, you could also have people hold and drink hot water or scalding hot orange juice, but people already like hot coffee. They already have mm-hmm. hot coffee rituals, so why not try to give them that? I got another one.
Okay.
Have you read about how coffee apparently seems to give you some kind of advantage in causing the brain to recognize emotionally positive stimuli?
Huh.
Yeah, so there was a study in PLOS-1 in 2012 by Lars Kuchink and Vanessa Lux called Caffeine Improves Left Hemisphere Processing of Positive Words. So basically what they found is that caffeine consumption boosts the speed at which the left hemisphere of the brain recognizes and processes positive words, but doesn't have any effect on the processing speed of neutral or negative words. And they think this is probably because caffeine seems to boost dopamine transmission in the brain. The Ohio State professor of psychology, Gary Wink, who has written a lot about the connection between foods and neurochemistry, writes that basically the dopamine activity caused by caffeine is probably one of the main reasons that caffeine is one of the most widely consumed psychoactive substances across the entire world. And so to go back to the PLOS1 study, the authors think that the dopaminergic qualities of caffeine are what's leading to this increased positivity boost in the processing powers of the, you know, the verbal processing centers of the left hemisphere. So at a time when you need people to work together as a team, get along well, have everybody happy with each other, it seems to me like boosting the recognition of words and other types of cues that signal positive emotion sounds like a good deal, right?
Yeah, yeah. Anything you can do to boost the positive communication.
Right. Anything that would help assist the processing of at least some cues of positivity in our environment seems worthwhile in space. And of course, again, you could just have people take a caffeine pill probably, right?
Yeah.
But people already like coffee. They already have coffee rituals. It seems like you can get all of these different effects concentrated into one thing if you just get coffee in space. So is there a problem with coffee in space? Why can't we just take Mr. Coffee up there?
Well, it's only occurring to me now that there's the whole diuretic aspect of coffee. But That's a whole another episode right there.
Yeah. Well, you're thinking about that while I'm going on about positivity. You're like, oh, pooping, yeah.
Well, I didn't think of it till now, to be honest. But I mean, that's a whole side of the human condition that is also problematic in microgravity, and a lot of engineering prowess has been directed at the problems related to just going to the bathroom in space.
Right.
Less effort has been put into the coffee problem. Coffee problem is not as high level. But the problem of making coffee in space is that pretty much all of our methods of brewing coffee are highly dependent upon on gravity.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And so we
don't even think about how important it is.
Yeah, yeah. Like even just roughly speaking, there are two methods of making coffee. Like one that's straight up using gravity, like water flowing down through grounds and then brewing the coffee. And then you have methods that involve pressure, like an espresso machine or an AeroPress, which is a device I really love for my coffee.
I've never used that. How does that work?
Well, it's essentially like a cylinder. It has a filter on one end. You put the grounds in, you pour hot water in, and then you use the plunger. You can let it steep a little bit too. So, you know, it's similar to something like a French press in that respect. But then you compress, you press it, and the pressure pushes the coffee out into your cup. But even that, even though pressure is involved, like that would be a disaster if I tried to use that in microgravity. And likewise, even a very nice espresso machine, which looks very compact and self-contained, you would not be able to run that in orbit because, it depends on pressure, but it still depends on gravity.
Yeah, maybe a little bit porous if you don't actually have such a thing as a down.
Right, and then if you have no such thing as a proper kitchen sink to clean any of these implements, I think most of us can think to very recent examples of huge messes they've made with coffee, you know, by accident, maybe in the cleanup phase.
Right. And that's all with a down.
That's with gravity in place and a proper sink to clean it up. But aboard the ISS, certainly aboard any other kind of, conceivable capsules or shuttles that we've used in recent decades, you're just not going to have that kind of cleanup capability. And the machine itself is going to just become grotesque. And you can't just send it back down necessarily either. Once you get something up on ISS, it needs to stay up there for a while without having to be – you can't send it down every weekend to get it cleaned.
Now, what about the method where you just put the grounds in your mouth and then squirt the hot water in and kind of swish it around?
Well, I guess that would work. Is that cowboy coffee?
No, wait. I'm going to rebrand it. That's executive coffee.
Executive coffee.
So now it's a luxury item.
Well, there's still a lot of room for human error in that method. Basically, one of the big things to keep in mind is that even if you take the technology out of the scenario, without proper gravity in place, liquids move differently. They absorb differently. And even something as seemingly no nonsense as an aeropress, which again just looks like a little pump device, mm-hmm. is just going to be disastrous in microgravity. Now, the basic process that we depend on to make coffee, just to really boil it down, you have hot water flowing through ground coffee beans, picking up their oil essence on the way down into the coffee pot. This coffee oil released during the roasting process is what we call cafe oil. Now, and like I said, an espresso machine, that's going to force the water through the fine grounds via pressure. But again, even that depends on gravity and would not work in space. So we're kind of left with quite a conundrum here. How do you even bring coffee into space, much less brew it?
Well, maybe we should take a quick break and then come back and explore this further.
All right, we're back. So how to get coffee into space, how to brew coffee in space. Well, we're going to have to talk about the past first, how it was done previously as humanity clawed their way up into orbit.
Does this involve the words freeze-dried?
Yes, you bet it does.
Oh, boy.
So first of all, let's get one thing straight. Prior to Apollo 11, that's 1969, the first crewed jaunt to the surface of the moon. Mm-hmm. Prior to this, there was no hot coffee in space.
Bummer.
You could have it cold, but this was the first mission to actually feature hot water.
Oh, so like the Gemini commanders mm-hmm. were on, they were powered by cold coffee.
Yeah, that was the only option.
That's sick.
Or at least room temperature or capsule temperature coffee. That was the only option.
Well, here's a science question I don't know the answer to. Maybe you do. Why is mid-temperature coffee so disgusting? Like, iced coffee's okay. Mm-hmm. I'm into that. Hot coffee's good, but, like, slightly lower than warm coffee is just gross.
Well, I don't completely agree with that.
Really?
Yeah, I mean, I enjoy coffee at every level of, mm-hmm. Every temperature. But I think the problem is when coffee reaches room temperature. Because I like cold coffee, mm-hmm. but I have a similar reaction if I am outside drinking coffee and I have allowed it to become cold as the natural environment. Mm-hmm. So I think that's the thing. Like with hot coffee and cold coffee, it becomes clear that it's clear that it's been prepared at a different temperature.
Yeah. Well, I guess maybe the same is true for a lot of foods and drinks, right? Like hot meat and cold meat are good, but room temperature meat is not great.
Bring me a room temperature hamburger patty. Yeah, no, nobody really wants that. So hot coffee, cold coffee, pre-Apollo 11, post-Apollo 11, it was still – coffee making was a very rough-looking ordeal. So what we're talking about here, as you referenced earlier, is dehydrated black coffee, freeze-dried, stored in a clear plastic bag, which you then reconstitute through a water probe.
Okay, so you stick the probe in and pump some hot water in.
Yeah, or you have your water reservoir in the capsule or the ISS or wherever you happen to be, space shuttle. And if you have the ability to have hot water, you can use hot water. Otherwise, you're just getting cold water and then you're shooting it into this bag. There's some pictures of this online. I'll try and link to one on the landing page for this episode at stufftoblowyourmind.com. But it looks kind of like a catheter with instant coffee in it.
No, I'm afraid to ask, but I have to wonder, is the bag that the coffee came in the same kind of bag they would pee in? Was it the same hardware?
I do not have an answer to that, but I would not be surprised if it was, you know? But when it comes to liquids in space, I mean, that's pretty much how a lot of it works. It's stuff in bags.
It's bag city.
Yeah, everything looks like a catheter in space. So this was the technology, and really this technology remained the same until very recently. Instant coffee in a bag. And it wasn't actually until Hawaiian-born astronaut Ellison Onizuka, the first Asian-American astronaut, he actually requested Kona coffee. He said, hey, let's spice it up a little bit. Let's mm-hmm. We have some great coffee in my home state. Let's see about getting some of that into orbit. And NASA said, oh, yeah, we can try that. And it was apparently a hot commodity, literally, I guess, but also figuratively, the Kona coffee would be something that they would trade with other astronauts, even cosmonauts.
Yeah, especially knowing what we know about the way the microgravity environment interacts with, say, the fluids in your head. We've talked before on the show about how, astronauts often have this problem where they live in a taste and scent deprived world,
mm-hmm.
Because when you are in a microgravity environment, normally the gravity of the earth while you're standing on the earth would be pulling all the fluids in your body toward your feet.
Mm-hmm.
And your heart naturally has to compensate for that by pumping really hard to get stuff up into your head and your upper shoulders and everything. But when that gravity is not there and you're just floating around, the heart's still overcompensating. And so it's just filling your head up with fluids. And you've got all this congestion and you can't smell or taste things very well. And this is why so many astronauts, like when we talked to Jeff Hoffman on the show, report really enjoying especially the shrimp cocktail,
yeah.
Which sounds disgusting.
Yeah, you know the shrimp itself is just awful.
Yeah,
but it's not the shrimp he's excited about.
It's got horseradish in mm-hmm. it. And that intense aroma sort of clears out the nose, wakes you up, and allows you to taste other things. So they would sort of have a shrimp cocktail full of horseradish as an hors d'oeuvre so they could taste the rest of their meal. a spicier, more fragrant kind of coffee. I can see that maybe doing a similar sort of thing.
Yeah, I think so. I've also seen it pointed out that astronauts tend to – they'll crave spicier and more flavorful things in orbit than they would normally crave on Earth.
Right. It's an extra special reason why you don't want to just be stuck with freeze-dried Folgers or whatever they've got.
Right. Now, we've touched on a number of other fluid dynamics and microgravity issues on the show before. We've talked about how tears pool in an astronaut's eye socket if they're crying or just generally leaking from the eye socket.
Mm-hmm.
The sinuses refuse to drain. One of my favorite is the fact that the bladder fills up, but not from the bottom to the top as it does in a gravity-bound body, but instead from all sides.
Ugh.
So it's not until it's completely full that you realize you need to urinate.
That's a weird image.
Blood flow is also an issue, and this was actually explored in the third season of The Expanse, the mm-hmm. Science fiction television series that I've talked about here on the show before, including earlier when I referenced their coffee maker. But there's a scene where you have all these individuals that have sustained internal injuries, and it's that everyone realizes that they're just doomed because they don't have a chance to heal. Unless they have some sort of artificial gravity, be it propulsion-based or some other form, or just return to some sort of a gravitational environment.
Now, why would that be? Why would it affect healing?
Well, I looked at I looked this up in a paper. There's a paper from 2009 titled Severe Traumatic Injury During Long-Duration Space Flight, Light Years Beyond ATLS.
Hmm.
So here's a quick quote from that article. After a prolonged exposure to weightlessness, the injured astronaut will be at a physiologic disadvantage compared to patients on Earth. Changes likely to impair their ability to withstand injury include reductions in circulating blood volume, reduced red cell mass, cardiac atrophy, dysrhythmias, reduced cardiac output, alterations in vascular tone and neuroendocrine function, loss of the protective bony mass, and possible immune suppression.
Oh, yeah. We've read about that before, too.
Yeah.
The immune system in space.
Yeah. So you can't help but think of that espresso machine. Now, no matter how well it's designed, it's just useless in microgravity. It's really a testament to to biological evolution, just how well life can do in a microgravity environment.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, we're not, say, like the mythical Japanese kappa with a little bowl of water on its head.
Right.
It would just float free and they'd lose their life essence in orbit.
But all of our earthly coffee machines are more like the kappa.
That's true. They have the engineering prowess of a yokai.
It's true. But wait a minute. We were talking about drinking coffee in space.
Oh, yeah. And having to go urinate in space. Going back to that urinary example about the bladder filling up from all sides, the fluid dynamics that we described there also impact such matters as fuel tanks.
Hmm.
So again, in microgravity, without gravity to force liquids to the bottom, they cling to surfaces. So our spaceship designs depend on vanes, sponges, screens, and channels to guide liquids inside of tanks.
Mm-hmm.
All right, say guiding them to a spigot or to an engine in the case of fuel. Now, we've also experimented with the use of liquid repellent coatings inside fuel tanks as well to avoid cling and the boil-off that can occur in the tanks.
Mm-hmm.
And this is research that's very much still ongoing. There was one study that came out just last year on the matter.
Now, fortunately, the astronauts do not need to drink from the fuel reserves.
No, they drink out of a straw or just sort of squeezing out of the bag, as you might imagine. Everything is essentially a Capri Sun, I guess, in orbit.
As I said earlier about your green tea pills, no offense, but that is a sick perversion of nature. You can't drink coffee with a straw, not hot coffee.
Indeed, drinking hot coffee through a straw, that's just asking for trouble.
Well, I mean, it's actually part of the ritual again. If the importance, the psychological importance of calming rituals like making and drinking a cup of coffee, it depends on minute repetitions of movements, mm-hmm. the sipping is an important part of the ritual.
Right. Yeah. You've essentially only met me halfway. I'm still left with this ridiculous consumption method that does not resemble my rituals at home.
But boy, howdy, sipping in space ain't easy.
Is there a way, Joe? Do we have a way now?
There is a way.
Ah.
So my source on this is a 2011 piece in NASA Tech Briefs, which details the development of what was then known as the Zero-G Cup. And this cup was the work of Donald R. Pettit of the Johnson Space Center, Mark Weiselogel of Portland State University, and independent consultants Paul Conkus and Robert Finn. So given the physics involved, if you're in, say, the International Space Station, how would you drink from a cup? The odd thing about trying to drink from a cup in space is that the main problems are not even necessarily the problems you're thinking about right now. Because you would think probably, okay, if there's no gravity holding the drink in the cup, it'll just float up out of the cup into the air, right? It's not that this couldn't happen. It certainly could given the right kind of forces. But generally in space, fluids like to stick to surfaces. If you've never watched, say, videos of astronauts playing with water in space, this is one of the things you'll first observe is that the water tends to not go off on its own unless you kind of like force it to by like flinging it.
Right.
Otherwise, say you take a wet towel and you try to wring it out in space, what you'll see is that the water gathers around the outside of the towel like this undulating liquid worm around the towel. And that's generally how things go. The liquids want to cling to surfaces. And this is because surface tension and capillary action rather than gravity dictate how liquid behaves in a container or on a surface. And so if you had a regular cup of coffee in space, imagine a mug that's got coffee in it, you would probably have a hard time sipping it because what do we do in order to sip coffee from a cup? We tilt the angle of the cup. We tip the cup and lower the lip, relying on gravity to keep the liquid level the same and eventually drive the liquid over the edge of the cup as the angle of the cup's lip goes down. But the coffee won't do that in space because you could turn the cup completely upside down and the liquid would probably stay in it, trying to cling to the walls of the container. So in this environment, sipping is dang near impossible. You have a few other options. If you've got coffee in a cup, you could suck it out with a straw, or I guess you could just another suction option would be you could clamp your mouth over the top of the coffee cup and create a seal and try to suck the coffee out that way. I think that would work, but that's not really what people want to do with their coffee.
Yeah, that's a very inhuman scene to try and imagine.
You could try to use momentum to get it out of the cup, basically throwing the coffee out of the cup at your mouth. That's not a good option either. So if you don't want to burn your face or do any kind of cone head-like mouth movements.
Oh, my God. I just realized, like, that's another huge thing. If you had a piping hot cup of coffee, it's just going to – and it gets on you. It's going to cling to you.
It'll cling to you. This is one of the, fall off.
Yeah. I mean, this is one of the reasons that some of the worst things to be scalded by are what? They're viscous or they're something like a noodle.
Yeah.
Because it doesn't just splash you and run. It splashes and clings.
Exactly. So, yeah, you don't want – piping hot coffee getting out of control out into the environment. So these are not great options. So the solution that these engineers came up with is to design the interior surface of the cup to take advantage of the way fluids behave in microgravity and zero-G environments. And so the zero-G cup uses sloping sides that encourage the coffee in the cup to gather toward the lip of the cup through capillary action because the shape of the cup is basically always causing any liquid in it to want to gather right near the lip of the cup. And then the astronauts can essentially put their mouth at the lip of the cup and kind of suck the liquid. So they can drink with a more or less normal sipping behavior.
Nice. So they kind of designed the inside of the coffee cup like it were the inside of a fuel tank.
Yes. And so it's not always possible to get every single drop of liquid out of the cup. But of course, as we know from our earthly coffee cups, once the water or the liquid level gets down to the very bottom, there's usually a few drops left in there. You can't get out even with the help of gravity. Now, one thing they pointed out about it is that so if like a tiny drop of coffee gets stuck in there and it dries there, the residue can upset how the sides of the cup make the coffee behave. So essentially, if it doesn't get cleaned out right, it'll stop working right.
Huh.
So that's one thing is you got to make sure it gets cleaned. But yeah.
So it's rather different than your typical office environment where some coffee cups will be sort of an ongoing science experiment.
Have you ever been the passive-aggressive person who washed somebody else's coffee mug?
I don't think I've gone that far. I've been known to tidy desks a little bit if it's like obvious that there are, say, multiple empty Diet Coke cans or something. I'll be like, that's a little much. Or like an obviously rotting fruit. But then again, I'm sometimes hesitant because I'm like, I don't know. Is this a neglected orange or is this really a science experiment? Because the How Stuff Works offices are exactly the places where something like the sort of place where that kind of thing could be happening.
Well, maybe we should take a break. And then when we come back, we will discuss the ultimate coffee space solution, the IS Espresso.
All right, we're back. It's the 21st century.
Bring me technology.
Yeah, we have humans in space. We don't have any – we haven't been back to the moon.
Mm-hmm.
We haven't sent people to Mars or Venus.
As far as you know.
Well, I know. I'm going to go ahead and say I know for certain that hasn't happened.
But we have come up with ingenious solutions for putting hot coffee in people's faces without burning them or making them clamp their mouth over the top of the cup like a cone head.
Right. It truly is, joking aside, it is a testament to human engineering that we actually have an espresso machine that functions in orbit and is functioning in orbit right now.
It's pretty awesome.
Yeah. It's called they call it the ISS Presso. So it's the Espresso. I'm not sure exactly how we should pronounce it on the show here.
ISS Presso.
ISS Presso.
Because then it ends with the S, Espresso.
Yeah.
Am I overthinking it here?
It definitely works better reading it in your head versus speaking it aloud. This is the device. Some of the key design challenges here, of course, as we've discussed, come down to water containment and sanitation. You want to keep the heated water contained. It can't just be leaking out all over the place. And it has to do its thing with the grounds as well. You want it to absorb the exact correct amount of oil as it passes through at the correct temperature.
Also, you're going to have a big problem if your machine is difficult to clean.
Yes. Yeah. It basically has to be self-cleaning or just a very clean process to begin with.
Mm-hmm.
You can't – again, there's no kitchen sink that you can take the thing apart in at the end of the day.
There has to be a better way.
Yes, and there is. So as detailed in the write-up, ISS Presso Development and Operations by Valerio Di Tana and Joshua Hall, published in the Journal of Space Safety Engineering in 2015, Italian designers at the engineering firm Argotech worked with the Lavazza Coffee Company and the Italian Space Agency, and they set out to conquer all of these challenges and bring a new kind of coffee into orbit to create what we've come to know as the ISS Presso.
Well, I hate to just openly celebrate cultural stereotypes, but I'm glad it was the Italians who made it happen.
Yeah, it feels right, doesn't it? And I think they realized it too. They said, look, somebody's got to step up and make coffee work in microgravity, and it should be the Italians.
Mm-hmm.
So the finished result is in many ways a kind of super Keurig cup machine.
Okay.
It looks kind of like a 3D printer as well.
Nice.
If you look up images of it. So here's what the device does. Pretty straightforward, except, highly engineered. You add the water. It heats it up. It shoots it through a prepackaged capsule and into a pouch, which then is either consumed from a straw, that was the original design,
mm-hmm.
or now is actually added to our special zero-G cup.
Well, that sounds nice, but that also makes it sound very simple. I suspect you're skipping a little bit of detail.
Yes. So, there are a number of details here. It's more complicated than it sounds. For starters, you still have to hit some key temperatures to make a proper cup of coffee.
Oh, yeah.
So it needs to hit the water needs to hit the grounds at 208 degrees Fahrenheit or 98 degrees centigrade. and it needs to leave the brewing unit at 167 degrees Fahrenheit or 75 degrees centigrade.
This is a home coffee making tip. If your home coffee machine makes bad coffee, it's very likely that the reason for this is that the water that's hitting the grounds is not hot enough. Mm-hmm. One easy way to find out if this is the case is to just see how your coffee that you normally use tastes if you just add your own boiling water in like a free filter and pour it over. Sometimes makes a huge difference.
Yeah, I mean, and that's one of the reasons, one of the many reasons I only use like AeroPress and French press these days. Like, I just heat the water up myself. There's no question about how hot the water is. Now, one of the things about hot water in space, though, in microgravity, steam bubbles don't evenly distribute. The bubbles can form together and create pockets of hot air that can potentially damage the machine and the users. And that's why the ISS machine here uses steel tubes instead of rubber tubes that can resist pressures greater than 400 bars.
I'm just now thinking for the first time, wouldn't it be a horrible story if there was like a fatal disaster on a spacecraft and the cause of it was the coffee machine?
It would. I mean, but it's the kind of thing that is possible,
yeah.
given the constraints of the environment. I mean, it's a reason there are so many additional safety requirements for anything that goes up, any device, especially that goes up on the ISS. So everything from sharp edges to the touch temperature, et cetera. Mm-hmm. So they not only had to design, in a sense, the perfect coffee maker here, the perfect espresso machine, but also one that just managed to hit some of the pickiest safety demands humanly possible. So it was sent up on April 20th, 2015, thanks to SpaceX, and it is, as of this recording, still in operation. It produces, it has a few different options. So you can produce a short black, a long black. You can make tea with it, which is good because not everybody that goes up on the ISS especially is going to be a coffee drinker.
Sure.
Tea is more popular with other cultures.
Totally true.
Yeah. And then also you can use it to make broth. So it can be used to rehydrate food. And I think this really, you know, I think makes a light bulb come on in many people's head when you realize, oh, it's not just a coffee and tea maker.
Right.
It is a multi-purpose kitchen implement as well.
It's how you make your shrimp stock and court bouillon on the ISS.
Yeah. So here's a quote from the paper I referenced from Detana and Hall. Quote, one of the big challenges undertaken by the engineering team was to design the ISS Presso as an ISS system and not only as a payload and extending the ISS Presso functionalities and capabilities. It does make espresso, which can provide a psychological benefit to the crew that is away from home for months at a time, but it also has the ability to expand or modify the crew menu. The ISS Presso can make teas as well as consommé. These additional options provide flexibility to the crew menu that is not currently available. Again, this was as of the writing. It had not yet gone up.
Mm-hmm.
For example, a dish of rice may have a variety of broth added to it for different tastes. And they also point out what we mentioned already, that astronaut tastes often change in microgravity due to fluid buildup in the head. So they may prefer more spice, more flavor in orbit. So the options with this machine give them that flexibility.
Oh, that is important because – so let's say you have astronauts taste testing food before they go into orbit
mm-hmm.
to try to see, okay, what am I going to like once I get up there? But you – the way food tastes to you on Earth is not the same way that it's going to taste to you once you're up.
Yeah. So you're going to want to have options, and this machine provides them.
But I think stuff like this matters. I am a pro space exploration person, even considering the costs, because in many ways you could argue that at least as a contingency, space exploration is the future of humankind, potentially from a colonization standpoint, but at the very least from, say, an exploration, research, and planetary protection standpoint.
Yeah, and certainly the engineering problems involved in making espresso, as we've laid out, are not confined just to coffee making.
Oh, yeah.
They impact everything from fuel systems to human biology. So mm-hmm. So it's not everything's interconnected when you're talking about the ISS or any kind of a prolonged space mission.
So speaking of the future, Robert, tell me about the future of coffee in space.
Well, my read on all of this is that this is the machine for the conceivable future. I think you may see different versions of it, mm-hmm. but I think this is the one that's going to stick for a while. I mean, because it's been engineered to do the thing we want it to do. Plus, it also can reconstitute food. I don't think you're going to see the technology evolve beyond this, really. You know, I mean, like this is kind of the perfect coffee maker.
Well, wait a minute. What about artificial gravity?
Okay, well that would change everything. Because you're going to have people that are like, all right, I've been on this lengthy space mission. I love the ISS Presso, but I really want a proper pour over, which is impossible. Mm-hmm. To do a pour over, you would need some sort of artificial gravity.
Right.
Now we've recorded an episode in the past where we talked about the two main conceivable methods outside of just magic gravity. The two main methods that could be used here.
Yeah, the ones that are feasible in reality. One of those would be linear acceleration, where you've got a spacecraft, whatever you're inhabiting, constantly accelerating at exactly the right rate to generate a force pulling you toward the floor at the same rate as Earth's gravity would accelerate you toward the ground on the Earth, which is, I think, 9.8 meters per second squared.
But that method is only good on the way to wherever you're going. So you could have your pour over on board this barreling spaceship. But then when you were reaching your destination—
If you need to decelerate or something.
Yeah, then it's either go back to the ISS Presso or
flip
go back
around,
to the catheter.
I guess. I don't know.
You could flip the ship around like halfway.
Uh-huh.
So you spend half your trip accelerating, half the trip decelerating.
Uh-huh.
But then what happens when you get to, you know, the planet that you're orbiting?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's tricky. Well, anyway, the more stable method that people usually talk about is the centripetal force method, which essentially involves a rotating habitat. Because as you know, like if you take a bucket of paint and you spin it around really fast in the air, you can hold it sideways and the paint doesn't pour out. And that's because of forces driving the paint and the bottom of the bucket together because of the spinning angular momentum. And of course, the same principle could be employed in a spacecraft or a space station. If you have it spinning and it's the right size and the right spinning at the right speed, it'll generate a force pulling you toward the outside rim of that spinning wheel or spinning capsule or whatever, and you could feasibly stand on it, pour coffee over on it, make a court bouillon.
So you could have, in theory, you could have a spaceship with a rotating torus that does nothing but enable coffee preparation. Like it could just have a Mr. Coffee machine on it, and that's it.
It'd be the most expensive Mr. Coffee in the history of humanity. But hey, it really matters to have a kitchen with a down, as we've said, not just for coffee. I mean, there are a lot of things that if you are dealing with a kitchen, you're going to be dealing with containers of liquids and stuff like that. If you can have a down, that would be great.
Now, of course, you could also try and get one of those Event Horizon gravity drives. And if you had one of those in place, then you could probably brew one hell of a cup of coffee.
Where we're going, you won't need a mouth to taste.
That's good. That's good. Now, the one thing you want to avoid, you want to get some cream in your coffee probably because you don't want it so black that light cannot escape it. It's just going to be a problem.
That's how we create a black hole.
Exactly.
Somebody brews the dankest cup of coffee in history up in space. And that's how it all ends.
Brewing for centuries while the crew is in hypersleep.
Robert, this has been fun.
This has. And I think I managed to finish my, almost finished my own cup of coffee while we were podcasting here.
I finished mine too, except a little tepid sip here at the bottom. Am I going to drink it or not?
My sip was a little chilly, but it was actually the air conditioning in this room has made it cold enough that it did feel like it was like cold brew coffee.
I'm here contemplating the riddle of existence. Will I swallow it?
You should, yeah.
Okay, here we go. Yeah, it wasn't very good.
So there you have it. Coffee in space, a great opportunity to talk a little bit about fluid dynamics and microgravity and some wonderful human engineering feats of achievement. So before we close out here, we're just going to say the usual. If you want more Stuff to Blow Your Mind, head on over to stufftoblowyourmind.com. That's where you'll find all the episodes, including such episodes as our microgravity episode, which we'll get, which gets very in-depth on some of these topics that we briefly discussed here today. You'll also find links out to our various social media accounts, such as Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. And as always, if you want to support the show, the best thing you can do is to Find us, rate us, and review us at wherever you get your podcasts.
Huge thanks, as always, to our wonderful audio producers, Alex Williams and Tari Harrison. If you would like to get in touch with us with feedback about this episode or any other, to let us know your favorite kind of coffee, what brew you would drink in space, to suggest a topic for the future, or just to say hi, let us know where you listen from, you can email us at blowthemind@howstuffworks.com.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit HowStuffWorks.com.